Welcome to the Leave No Doubt podcast. Thank you for joining me. To start with, I'd just like to thank our episode sponsors, Connection Technology, specialists in telecoms and IT services. So please check them out. Today, we are joined with Bethany Chadwick. I hope I got your surname right there. First team physiotherapist at Swansea City. I thought it was really important for us, to get on a physio to share, injury advice, how to stay fit, the general things around the game that, you don't worry about until they happen. So welcome, Beth.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Brilliant. So, Beth, we'll get stuck in straight away. For some of the listeners, they might not see or what a physio does on a day-to-day basis, So what does the role of physio look like within a professional football club on a day-to-day basis?
So obviously we've got two different types of players really that we look after. So we've got obviously your injured players and we've got your fit players. So kind of taking it down those two routes really. So with the fit players, the ones that we're expecting to go out and train that day, we've got something that we do called wellness. So we'll check in obviously with the players every single morning. And if there's anything that they're worried about, like hamstring tightness, quad tightness, whatever it may be, fatigue from the day before, they'll usually report that on their wellness so that we've got an idea before they come in. So in terms of those players, that'll be our first point of call with them, is checking, is it on one side? Is it both sides? If it's one side, then obviously we'd be a little bit more concerned it might be an injury as opposed to maybe DOMS if it's both sides from a gym session or from training, whatever it may be. Make sure that we then prep them correctly for training. So whether that's they need some soft tissue, they need some activation because they're a little bit weak in those areas, prep them ready for whatever that training session is. So if the S&Cs or the coaches have told us that it's going to be more of a linear kind of high speed day, or if it's maybe a change of direction day, then we'll prep them obviously in that way. Again, if they're fit but they've had previous injuries, then they might need to do some injury prevention work. So to stay on top of things. Typically tends to be things like ankles, hamstrings, anything like that, that they may need to then extra prep for that specific player based off their position on the pitch. If we go down the other route of obviously injured players, then we look after them obviously once all the other lads have gone out typically. So that can be anywhere from small injuries, maybe 2-3 days that they've just kind of tweaked something, to the more long-term injuries that you're looking at, your 9-month mark, like your ACLs, and anywhere in between really. So those guys pretty much, they report with the same as the team, but they'll obviously do a completely different day. So they'll have treatment, they'll have their strength sessions, whether or not that's S&C based or physio based, depending upon where they are in the rehab. And that tends to typically be how a normal day looks for the physio department.
No, that's a really, I guess, good insight into what that day-to-day looks like. And I just thinking about it, I did have a line of questions I wanted to go down, but just from like what you mentioned there straight away, the wellness or that initial check-in, for those players that may not see the benefit, those who have to do it might not see the benefit of why they're doing it, or players who might be a club that don't do a wellness, what's the purpose and what's the benefits of that, that process?
I think first and foremost, it's a check-in, it's a self-check-in for the players. So when they first get out of bed, obviously we know any inflammatory cycle, any inflammatory reaction, that first thing in the morning, you're going to get stiffness. So when they're first waking up, it almost gives them like an idea that they need to get up and think first thing, as soon as they get out of bed, right, how am I feeling today? Am I tired? Am I fresh? Is there any areas of specific soreness that I need to be aware of? I mean, that's something that you can do even if you don't have a physiotherapy department at your club. You can do that personally. Just wake up, have a little bit of a feel how you are. Is there any areas that are specifically standing out to you? Is your Achilles a little bit sore? Is your quad a bit sore? Like whatever it may be. Right, okay, why is it sore? Then you're trying to rationalize it. So that's what we would then do. We would then take that information. If we're getting 5 players reporting hamstring tightness, then we might be like, okay, they had a big day yesterday. We'll look at the GPS metrics. Does it match up? But if we're only getting 1 that's coming back with maybe a little bit of quad tightness or something, then that's a bit more of a red flag of, okay, what what is it that that specific player's done or is carrying or is changing in order for that area to be sought. But I think it's just, it's for the players really initially to think, right, am I 100% fit? Am I good to go as I am? Or is there something I need to go and speak to somebody about to get myself fit, prepped, ready for the session, for what I'm going to do?
And I guess as a player, you know, you're the only one who really knows yourself, right? So you're the only one that really knows what you're feeling like in the morning. Was that normal, you know, to what you've been doing? Or and if you're not, I guess if you're not thinking about that in the morning, if you don't have access to a wellness or physiotherapy department, or you're not communicating that to your physiotherapy department, then you might actually be missing, like you said, a red flag or something that could go on to become something.
Yeah, a lot of the time the stuff that we pick up on wellness is simple stuff. It's not going to be like your major injuries. Most of the time you'll know when you've done them, but that doesn't mean that it's not a precursor for something further down the line.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think one thing I wanted to touch on, like, you know, straight away and just get that, you know, that introduction into the game of football you know, where it is and it's the demands on players, you know. So you work in the Championship, you know, notoriously a very demanding league. Obviously, there's a lot of training, there's a lot of games, there's a lot of... So what are you seeing in terms of, you know, the actual demands on players? And you know how it may be affecting them.
So there's obviously a high demand. So game schedule plays a big part in this, and that'll be the same whether you're a Championship player or whether you play. We've got Welsh leagues, obviously local to us. So both of those standards, most of it's going to depend on your training schedule and your game schedule, and they're going to kind of depend on each other. So especially we know around Christmas time, we've got a really hectic game schedule usually. So we usually have two games a week for maybe 3-4 weeks in a row. Now, leading up to that, we'll obviously want to try and condition the players so that they are at their optimal physical condition in order to try and get through that. So a lot of the demand for us is obviously looked at by the S&C department. They take kind of like main control of that and feedback a lot of the information. So they're obviously looking at training loads. They know exactly what each player will have as typical output in a game. They'll work their training week, obviously, off of that. They'll monitor their acute chronic loads, make sure there's no spikes in that data. Obviously, there's spikes in data. So in terms of what we mean by that is, like, if somebody has a week off, say you have a little ankle niggle and you have a week off, and then you go back into full training and you haven't got a physiotherapy or an S&C team around you, you're going to spike in terms of an acute load because you've had a deload for the week, you haven't really done anything, and then you've gone back into training and done, say, 2-3 sessions in a game. Now, that's going to put you slightly at an increased risk of injury, so that's what we're kind of monitoring for. And what we're trying to do is make sure we know the demands on our players are quite high, so their training loads obviously are monitored for that, their game load is monitored, so their games are compared to previous games. Or is it high for them for a game? Have they changed positions? Have we changed formation? Is what they're expected to do from a manager to a different manager different? All of those sorts of things. And then monitoring their acute chronic load and making sure that we don't see any spikes. Okay, we're not always going to be able to rule the spikes out, and I'm going to be able to get rid of them, but we'll be able to then monitor those players a little bit better. I think demands on players over the last few years have changed drastically. So obviously playing styles have changed. Managers are wanting obviously higher presses or a bit more intensity in games, and that then is reflected in the GPS. And this season, I think all leagues, I know it's being done in Welsh leagues as well over here, is obviously the additional time that's added on in the game. So we were typically used to seeing maybe 3-4 minutes. That's now increased to maybe 8 to 10 minutes. Now, if you add 2 extra, 3 extra games into a month's schedule, you're now not playing 90 minutes or 95 minutes, you're playing 110 minutes. You're effectively playing an extra half of football at a good intensity throughout that month. So you have to really monitor these demands that you're placing upon the players and think, especially maybe managers and everything like that, think about actually what you're expecting of them over that time.
Yeah, that's a brilliant insight into, I guess, how you work and how you collaborate and how you think about those game demands and loads. If I was a player and, you know, I maybe don't have access to that kind of support, you spoke about, you know, periods where you had time off to then, you know, periods going back into training and monitoring or ensuring that you're not spiking as much. You know, is there any you know, rules of thumb or advice you can give for those players to go, like how they can help manage themselves back in from low periods to high periods or within high periods?
Yeah, I think obviously common sense approach, if you've had a longer period out, then you're going to need a longer period of reintegration. If you had a shorter period, then you may be all right to go majoritively back in. If you've only had a week off, say you've had a little niggle, say it's an adductor injury and you've been able to do straight line things, and carried on your running load, then you're not going to have as much of a problem as, say, someone who's had a broken leg, been out for 6, 7, 8 weeks, hasn't been able to load the muscles. So I think it's just a case of using what's at your disposal. So things like Apple Watches, things like that are really good. You can track how much you're doing in terms of distance. I know they're not exactly the same as GPS. They're not going to give you all the data. But if you build consistently over time, back in from, say, a long-term injury, you'll be able to see, obviously, what's happening with your heart rate. You'll be able to see the distance that you're covering each week. Jot it down. Keep a note of it. Keep a note of, like, what you've done, any issues you've had that week. Again, that wellness thing kind of comes into it again in the morning. If you write down, right, what you've done in your session, say you've done, like, a 5K run or whatever, you've done a little bit of ball work on the field, feeling all right, the next morning that injury was a little bit sore or it was a little bit achy, then you're kind of doing what we're doing in this environment. If you're doing it yourself, it's quite simple to do in a very simple way. If you have a reaction to anything as you're starting to try and phase yourself back in, take a step back, go back to the last session that didn't have a flare or didn't cause some sort of reaction, redo that session, ensure that's still okay, that's still not giving you any reactions, and then progress back to that session again. It might be that you can redo, if there's a mild reaction, you might be able to redo that session few days later and you've settled off and it's fine. It may be that you need to find a midpoint between those two sessions. Have you over-egged? Have you done loads more change of direction stuff? Have you put the cones out and gone around the cones loads with the balls and it's really aggravated something? Or have you just jumped the distance too much? How much total volume you're doing? It's very, very simple if you keep on top and you keep track of it. If you don't keep track of it, then you've got no way of knowing what it was that you've maybe changed or done that may have caused that flare. But as long as you kind of integrate slowly, if you've had a long term and you have no problems, then you should be all right to keep going. Just keep an eye on, again, that you don't then go, okay, I'm fine, I've done one training session, I'm good to play 90 minutes. After maybe an 8 week hiatus, that might not be the best decision. Obviously, build your game time. Games are a lot more intense than training. Make sure you can get through training first. A more intense drilling training, things like that, and then build your game minutes from there if you're looking at a longer term thing.
Welcome to the Leave No Doubt podcast. I'm so excited to welcome our new sponsors, Connection Technologies, a market leader in business-to-business tools ranging from business mobile, hosted telephony, and fixed line services. Head over to their website at www.connection-technologies.co.uk. Fill in their inquiry web form and find out how Connection Technologies can support your business moving forward.
You know, that's great advice. And, you know, I hear like the common sense and things like that, like all the time. And I think sometimes common sense is like, it's only common sense if you know what you're looking for sort of thing, or you've seen what you've done. So I guess that's quite good advice for players that, you know, whilst for the medical professional, it sounds common sense to, you know, oh, let's manage yourselves back in and all these sort of things. But actually, you know, for players to start thinking about what they're doing, you know, noting down, I think that's good advice. You know, they're kind of doing, you know, what we professional clubs would be doing anyway, but they can take the ownership and on that themselves. One of the routes I wanted to go down is, like, obviously for players, you know, it's really important that players stay fit, you know, stay fit in the season, stay fit throughout, you know, their careers. You know, I think if you're an aspiring player, I think there's a stat out there that one of the biggest predictors, if you're in a football academy, to actually making it as a professional is the times lost through injury. You know, if you're not training, you're not going to develop. Is there any like general things that players should be doing to help themselves stay fit and playing football and training?
Yeah, I think you need to think about what position you play in. So if you're obviously playing down the wings and you're expected to do a lot of high speed running sprint distance, then you need to be thinking about muscles such as your hamstrings, quads, keeping them nice and strong, making sure that they've got good range. Now, when we say this, we're not saying everyone's got to be able to get the leg behind the head. Okay. But if you've got a straight leg raise and you lie on your back and it gets to 90 degrees, then make sure you maintain it at 90 degrees. Okay. So by that, I mean, we don't want to then see that drop into 70. Okay. And then you play in at 70 degrees of a knee raise, of a straight leg raise. So lying on your back.
Lying on your back.
And then you literally just lift your leg, keep your knee straight. And if you can get to 90, then great. Most people will not be able to get to 90. Okay. But if that's what you've got naturally, then that's what we need to be able to see that you've got consistently. You don't want to then be seeing this drop and kind of wiggle all around. Same thing, if you can only get to 45, you can only get to 45. That's great. Keep it there. Okay. So we're looking at range, obviously maintaining range. Now you can do that by stretching, foam rolling, anything like that. Really simple kind of techniques. You can Google lots of hamstring stretches and everything. There's tons. The main thing then as well is strength through that range. So whatever range you have available, you need to make sure that you can control that range that you've got. So make sure that you're working hamstring strength throughout the whole of that range. You can't just work mid-range and expect the hamstrings to be good and for you to be doing injury prevention, shall we say, because you're preventing injury in the range you're working in. So make sure that you do everything. So things like RDLs, where you work through range from more from the hip, knee flexion, so kind of like a hamstring curl, where you're working range through from the knee position, things like that, they're all going to help. So you want to be able to maintain strength. You want to be able to maintain your range of movement. You also want to obviously work on your patterning, so your muscular patterning. So things like prep before you go out to train. So if you're going to be expected to sprint around in a training session, have you actually prepped your hamstrings to do so? So have you done the movement patterning? Have you done what we call A skips, B skips, which look at the movement patterning that you're going to be using in sprint mechanics? So again, you can Google that. You can have a look at sprint mechanic drills, things like that. They don't take very long. They're a really good injury prevention mechanism to warm up. So if you're doing anything linear, if you're in a linear position, I'd recommend doing that. In terms of if you're looking a bit more midfield and you've got a lot more change of direction, then it's going to be a lot more glutes and adductor focus. Don't get me wrong, you're still going to obviously run around. You're still going to use your hamstrings and your quads. But a lot more of that focus is going to be around the glutes and the adductors. So again, there's that looking at range. Exactly the same idea, principles, so range of adductors. So when you stand or when you let your leg drop out to the side, how much range have you got? And again, working through range. So Copenhagen's, so like when you put one foot on the bench and then you lift your body up to try and hold with your top leg. You can do ball squeezes with different size balls to make sure that your legs are in different positions. You can have your knees bent, you can have your knees straight. Work through all of the range that you're going to have available. And again, with the glutes as well, make sure that you just make sure you warm them up before you go. So things like the little booty bands that I'm sure that loads of people have seen that the girls use in the gym, they're brilliant for activating for glutes prior to going out and doing sessions. They're not brilliant, obviously, for strength, but a little bit of activation, then they'll switch the glutes on. So just think about your positioning. So goalkeepers, plyometrics, then we jump in, stop, start in. Make sure you warm up specifically to your position on pitch and make sure that you strengthen the muscles that you will need in your position on pitch.
Yeah, I mean, there's loads in there. And I guess if I was to summarize what I was hearing, it's like the specificity of what players are doing. So thinking about their position and what common football movements they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, how they're going to then make sure that they're, I guess you mentioned firstly, maintaining range of motion in those joints, in those muscles, and then also making sure that they're strengthening them. And then the last or the second point you had there was ensuring that there's a good warm-up before they go out and do the training. I use the example of running sometimes, and I think loads of people are guilty of, you know, you want to go out for a run, so you just put your shoes on and go out and run. But, you know, sometimes, you know, these muscles are, you know, need to be awakened and switched on and warm and ready, and you're going to get the most out of your training session if you're doing that. But then I guess also at the same time, you know, you're preventing those injuries as well, right?
Yeah, 100%. That's exactly it.
So yeah, I think there's loads of advice in there. You know, you spoke about the mobility and the strengthening. How often should players be looking at doing that within a week?
Depends again on how much you're training. So obviously in the professional environment or the elite environment, they do that quite regularly. For anyone who's training maybe twice a week, playing once a week, training once a week, playing once a week, after games is probably the best time to do it, when your muscles are nice and warm. It'll help get out the lactic acid, it'll help with recovery, everything like that. And then maybe the day after a game. So on a recovery day, so match day plus two or plus one, that's when we'd usually do a yoga set with the players. So on those recoveries, so either immediately after the game or 2 days after.
Okay, so like the mobility and the strength work. So football, obviously, we spoke about the specific nature of it. Is there any common injuries that we see in football? You know, what's the most common ones you get in football?
Yeah, so non-contact injury-wise, we tend to see a lot of, like, sort of soft tissues, so hamstrings we see a lot of ankles. They're the two main ones. Groins, again, we see a lot of, probably not as much as the hamstrings and the ankles. And then it's more the other injuries that we tend to see are more contact based. So again, you can get ankle ligament injuries from contact, dead legs, for the soft tissues. They can be exceptionally painful for players and can stiffen up really quick. And then obviously knee ligament injuries, things like that. Obviously in football, a lot of this stuff that we tend to see is lower limb. So hips, knees, ankles, probably knees and ankles, the majority in terms of joints. And then obviously all the muscle structures around there.
So you spoke about obviously the two different types, contact and non-contact or soft tissue injuries. Just so we're making sure we're getting it right. Contact injuries are ones where you take a kick, right? They're ones where there's actually, you know, there's a component of it just happening in the game. And then the soft tissue injuries are ones where, you know, players aren't around and you might be running around and it happens, or you change direction and it happens.
Yeah, so contact injuries, obviously contact with another player. So either they've collided, they've kicked, tackled, anything like that, that where the direct contact has caused the injury, running into the goalposts, it could be anything. Whereas a non-contact is typically the player, it's the mechanics usually that have caused the injury. So either you're running or you're changing direction. There's no other player involved typically in that.
And just going into those contact injuries a little bit more, you know, other than obviously the big ones where you've had a contact and you've broken leg, or, you know, you've caused some serious damage there. You spoke of, like, football, we talk about knocks all the time, don't we? Or dead legs or bruises or things like that. What should players be doing if they get that in a game, you know, after the game, and they've had a knock to the thigh or something, or the ankle, or what should they be doing?
So immediate management is ice. So ice and compression. So you do want a little bit of swelling, which sounds really weird, but you do want a little bit of swelling, because swelling is going to bring obviously white blood cells to the area, everything to help heal the damaged tissue. So even though when we talk about a dead leg and we talk about contact, we talk about damage to the tissue. Now, that's not a tear. It's not a tear that you'd think of as like when you're running and you tear a muscle, but it does cause damage to the fibers. So you are still going to get a similar reaction. So you want a little bit, but you want to try and keep that manageable and under control. So ice, compression, elevation, all of the stuff that obviously you do for your knocks. Now, a dead leg in particular can be really sore. They can be really quite tight. You have to be careful. Obviously, there can be, in certain cases, there can be problems ongoing from dead legs. If you're in a lot of pain, then you need to go and seek medical advice for it. If it's just a typical dead leg that you kind of get up afterwards. You've sat in the change rooms for 10 minutes, team talk afterwards, and you think, oh, that's getting a bit stiff. Get ice on straight away. Don't get in a boiling hot shower. Try and keep the heat to a minimum. Don't stretch it, even though it feels like it probably needs to be stretched, okay, because you could damage further the tissue structures underneath there. Ice, compression, elevation. You can walk around. You can kind of go on a walk. Don't go and do anything like a heavy quad-based gym session in the first 48 hours because that's typically when you're going to see the biggest bleed from the impact. So try and keep everything to a minimal loading period over that 48 hours afterwards.
Yeah, so you mentioned ice there. So how long would you ice for, and you know, how often would you do it for?
So we typically say 15 minutes. So 15 minutes every hour to 2 hours. Allow, obviously, the numbness to settle and then back onto the ice. Don't ice for over 20 minutes. You can cause more blood flow to the area rather than less. So literally keep it 15 minutes. 20 minutes and over, you can cause too much blood flow to the area. So stay safe with 15.
Brilliant. And that's across the 48 hours straight after, immediately after.
Yeah, so you typically bleed in about 48 to 72 hours. Obviously, it depends on the size of the impact. If it's a smaller impact, then that might subside a little bit quicker. If it's a larger impact, then I'd do it on the 72 hours. If it's a smaller impact, then I'd look at the 48 hours.
One thing you hear a lot of the time is acute or chronic injuries. So I guess acute injury is something where there's been an actual, you know, a moment where it's kind of suddenly come on, and chronic injury is something that builds over time. Is that the difference? And what should we be looking for, I guess, for those chronic injuries?
Yeah, so exactly right. So an acute injury is typically a new injury. So something that's happened within the last maybe week or so, you can pinpoint a specific onset for it, you know, exactly how it's happened or exactly how it's come on or when it came on. Chronic injuries tend to be something that grumbles a little bit in the background first. We tend to typically see these more as tendinopathies. So people say they've got a little bit of a grumbly Achilles, it's a bit stiff, it's a bit sore, a bit achy. Once they get going and warm, it's fine, and then it gets achy afterwards. Again, you can get them in the patella, in the knee. So they're typically what we tend to see the majority of the time with these chronic injuries. Now, the difference being is obviously how you treat them. So an acute injury is obviously going to be going through the swelling, the initial swelling period. So obviously we go back to obviously what we just spoke about in terms of ice, compression, elevation, make sure that we reduce the swelling in the initial instance. With your chronic injuries, they tend to be a little bit harder to treat, especially obviously on your own. You need to look at the underlying cause. So usually, typically with the chronic injuries, there's something that's causing these to set off. So is that a lack of strength somewhere? Is it that the tendon can't take the load that's being put through it? Now, they're a lot more difficult to manage and a lot more difficult to get under control than your acute injuries. We typically don't tend to need as much of a settle down period, shall we say. These tend to typically come off the back of those periods where players have had a deload and then loaded back up. So unloading them again is almost counterproductive. You need to find that kind of sweet spot. So if you are struggling with any of those chronic-y type issues, obviously, first point of call, if you have access to physio, I'd definitely go and speak to your physio. If not, then obviously if you can outside of the club or whatever, get some help on that, then that would be ideal. If not, then you really want to be looking at starting to focus on your pain relief first. So we typically tend to do isometric exercises, so exercises where you aren't actually changing the muscle length. You're just working at the mid-range for that muscle and producing strength. They actually have a pain relief part to them, so they can help with pain relief. They also help with the load on that part of the body. And then obviously from there, then we'd start looking at eccentric, so where you're actually taking load and the tendon is elongating as you're doing it. So things like dropping down off a step for the Achilles, single leg drops, things like that. They take a lot longer typically to settle down. And again, you do want to still use your ice, your anti-inflams, everything like that, but you don't need them for the same reason. It's more of a pain relief as opposed to kind of reducing swelling that's settling into the area.
And, you know, one you hear about a lot of time, and I guess for youth players, you know, is the, I get this right, the osteostratus, the knee pain, or, you know, shin splints. You know, what is there anything specific young players and can be doing to offset this or stop this from happening, or if it has started to happen, you know, what should they be trying to do?
Yeah, these are really difficult to manage, because typically by the time obviously they're presenting with symptoms, you're already quite far down the line with it. So typically what I would look at is how much sport you're playing to start with. Are you playing football 3 days a week, rugby 4 days a week? Are you out every night doing anything? Is there anything that you can give? Can you give one night maybe for a little bit just to help settle it down? So again, we're looking at that load. So how much are you actually putting through your body consistently week on week? The second one is obviously muscle length. So usually these injuries occur from the pull on the bone on the insertion. So where the tendon inserts onto the bone, they create like a shearing effect. And it's that area that they connect to the bone then becomes sore, irritated, inflamed, everything. So one area that we can typically tend to try and reduce pain is if you stretch. So if it's Osgood's, then it's quads. And if it's Achilles, so Sever's disease in younger athletes, then it's calves. So quad stretches, calf stretches. Anybody at home, if they can just do like a nice little massage, that doesn't need to be anything. It's really, really simple. So even just a little bit of heat to the quad, and then just literally nothing pressurized, just a nice flush, just to try and warm up the muscle before they stretch. That sometimes can give them a little bit of extra range of movement when they're stretching. Ice over the painful area is always a good one. Obviously, again, it'll just help pain relief and help with swelling. A lot of these settle down as you lower the load and you stretch the quads and you ice the knee. The problem then becomes when you try and reintegrate back into training or into the load that you had. So again, we go back to really just taking it step by step. So rather than maybe going from nothing to everything, if you've had to cut everything out because it's so sore, integrate one training session back in on the first week. How does it respond? Okay, if it's good, integrate maybe two at the opposite ends of the week, so that you've got a nice rest period in between, and then shorten that rest period down as you go, but make sure that you don't flare at any point. So if your symptoms come back, right, okay, you've pushed it too far, take yourself again, step back, allow your body to settle at the load it's happy with, and then build back through again. That's probably the easiest way to deal with those growth-related injuries. We can't stop players growing, unfortunately, and bone grows faster than what the muscle can adapt around it, and that's half the reason why these problems start to occur. And then when you've got obviously increased load on top, that can create quite a problem.
And I guess, you know, speaking about there, like you know, the growth for these young players being, you know, one of the reasons this might be happening, is there any, like, I guess, recommendations for players who, you know, they speak about when you start going through the growth spurts and, you know, players have that awkwardness, you know, should they be looking at their load in this period of time?
Ideally, yes. It's just more of a monitoring thing. So if you're not getting any problems, then obviously there's no need to, you don't need to cut everything down just because you're growing. But just be almost, I think it's more parents as well, as just be aware they're going through a growth spurt. If they start to complain after training session, oh, my knees are starting to get a little bit achy, my heels are starting to rub in my school shoes, little things like that, they'll be the indicators before the full-blown pain and Osgood really start to flare up and you start to get the lumps around the insertional areas. If you can kind of be clued onto those early stages, then you'll be able to treat it a lot easier. If you wait until it gets to full-blown Osgood Sever's, then it's quite hard to treat. If you start into try and kick the ball, for example, and you're finding that you're missing it and things are kind of, you're falling over your own feet, that's usually a little bit of a trigger that something is changing in terms of your kind of growth phase and your growth spurts. And maybe you might want to start, you know, thinking, right, okay, I need to start stretching I need to do a little bit of movement pattern work before we start training, even if that's just running around a few cones and making sure you get your foot patterning back to where it needs to be. All of those little things will help.
Yeah, and I guess there's a great example of a work being done out in at the Ajax Academy, obviously like a renowned academy for doing bringing through players. And I think this is one of the periods where they track the players, you know, growth and maturation, and when they are starting to go through that peak height velocity, you know, the growth spurt where young players really shoot up, they start decreasing the actual football load, but then start giving them a more like gymnastic-y type exercises to try and you know, actually get them reacquainted with the new size, I guess, they are with them, the coordination and those bits and pieces. So yeah, I think that's really great advice. I wanted to touch on actual injuries. So you mentioned before, you know, hamstring strains being one of the most common football injuries. I imagine there's lots of players out there listening to this who may have had a hamstring strain in the past, or want advice on it. What does what's the general rehab process look like if a player has had a hamstring strain?
Yeah, so obviously majority of football players will do their hamstring running, okay, sprinting, that sort of thing. So we'll go down that general route. So early management, again, for most of all your soft tissues, this is the same for any soft tissue injury really, is manage the swelling and manage the pain. If it's a high-grade tear, obviously the player's going to be in quite a lot of pain. So it's early ice, it's compression, it's elevation. It's the things that you do for any swelling or any injury that you think is coming in. Pain relief if needed, obviously dependent upon the age of the player. And obviously we're quite lucky that we've got doctors available if they need paracetamol, anything like that. But just think, if you're unable to walk day to day without high levels of pain, then pain relief may be something that you want to go down. They're saying now in early stage injuries, soft tissue injuries, then rather than rest, we need optimal loading. Now, that can be quite confusing for a lot of people, because what actually is an optimal amount of loading? The easiest way that I would describe this is, if you're mildly aware of your symptoms and you're like, all right, okay, I can feel it, but it's not painful, it's not sharpshooting, it's not feeling like it's stabbing, then that's fine. So walking around day to day, going up and down stairs, things like that, you'll be fine with. You don't need to be on crutches offloading that muscle. The muscle does still need to function. It does still need to work. If you're getting to the point that you can maybe only do a little bit of a walk and then you've got to sit down because it's really quite painful, then yes, you might need to be looking at other alternatives for that. So keep your pain levels under control. Keep it manageable. Don't be really hurting yourself. Pain is obviously giving you an idea of whether or not you're doing more damage to the muscle. Okay. Again, early isometrics are really good for pain relief. So, and again, with this, I would just stress, don't put yourself into pain. So say you're lying on your back with your foot on a chair with your knee at 90 degrees for a little bit of a mid-range hamstring isometric. You are not trying to push down so hard that your entire body comes off the floor. You are literally pushing your heel into the chair until you are aware of your hamstring working, and that's all. You don't need to be pushing. So early management, ice, optimal loading, compress, elevate it above your heart level to reduce, and isometrics for pain relief. And I would literally just keep it at that. Until you can do all of that and all of your activities of daily living, so walking around, going downstairs, whatever it is that you do, pain-free, that is where I would pitch it. Once you're able to do everything day-to-day pain-free, that's when you then can start looking at your mid-stage and what you need to start doing to strengthen that hamstring back up. So again, you're going to begin with some low-level load things. So you might want to just do good mornings with not even a barbell, but just like a kid's barbell or a broomstick on your back, just working through the range, making sure, again, you're following that exact same recipe. So you're allowed to be aware of it, but you're not allowed to be in pain the whole way through. So things like good mornings, you want to be looking at concentric hamstrings. So bridges, double leg bridges, progress onto single leg as and when you can do. Once you can do easy hamstring activation, so double leg hamstring activation, concentric, so where the muscle is shortening in the gym, low to medium load, you can start doing some jogging at a low load. Again, follow the same recipe. You don't really want to be feeling any pain. Mild awareness, maybe you might, when you first start running, that first maybe minute, you might be like, oh, that feels a bit weird. It feels a little bit tight or whatever it may be. Keep the running speed down low. So maybe even like 7-8 kilometers an hour. Just get used to the pattern. And again, obviously you've done by this point, you should have done running mechanics before you get on the treadmill to make sure that you're all right. If you feel it in the running mechanics, you're going to feel it on the treadmill. So don't start treadmill jogging until you can run a mechanic pain-free. And then just build up from there. So build, initially we would build, so we do an endurance run, so maybe 10 to 15 minutes at a low speed. And then once we're happy with that, then we'd build the speed up. So maybe go from 8 kilometers, 9 kilometers, 10 kilometers, just gradually build day on day. After you can do, obviously, your concentrics, all your low speed running, pain-free, no problems, then you can move on to your late phase. So you can start heavy eccentrics, heavy concentrics. You can look at fatigue resistance training. So things like tantrums where you're lying on your belly and you're kicking into an exercise ball. So that really works the hamstrings, really works the endurance capacity of the hamstrings. 20 seconds of that and you'll probably be screaming and wanting to stop just because they're burning. So that's what you're looking for. And then you can start looking at on pitch, doing your high speed running, your sprints, things like that, and your more explosive kind of turns and sprints across the pitch. They should be kept till last minute. So, and you should not be sprinting, you should not be explosive at all until everything in the gym is pain free, your range of movement is back, and you pretty much are unaware that you've had a hamstring problem. Until that point, don't even go anywhere near sprinting.
Yeah, brilliant. I guess that's quite quite comprehensive, and you know, I think there's probably you know, you spoke about a lot of detail within there, but there's the themes of, isn't there, of that early management and what players should be starting to do, and then you know that middle management, the concentrics, the lower level running speeds, that is, and then your late stage where you're looking at, you know, your heavier lifting, your eccentric work, your capacity based work. And then, you know, finally going back to what the mechanism of the injury probably was and sprinting and building up towards that before you even, I guess, consider going back into, you know, training. So I guess there's loads for players to take out from there. I'm just conscious of time and, you know, making sure, you know, if, you know, there's loads of bits and pieces what we've discussed in here. And, you know, if there was something that, you know, you would recommend a player to stay fit, you know, let's be proactive with this, you know, what sort of things would you recommend players to do? I mean, or what was the biggest thing that you should recommend a player to, you know, think about, be aware of and so forth?
I think it's preparation for me. So you wouldn't go sign up for a marathon and then expect to just turn up on the day and do it. It's just not going to happen. And I think you need to think of a football match exactly the same way. You can't not do anything throughout the week in training or whatever it is and then turn up on the game and expect to play your best. You have to prep your muscles. You have to be in the best physical condition you can be to perform at the optimum level. So think about your position and think about what you need to do and then try and break that down into little blocks. So be that, right, okay, can I reproduce the muscle activation in the gym? Do I need to do a gym session doing that? Can I reproduce the movement pattern that I'm going to produce in the gym? Can I do that? Do I feel good, importantly, the day of training or the day of the game? Am I looking after myself right? Am I making sure that I'm going into that in the best possible condition? If you do that, if you prep yourself properly, you're giving yourself the best possible outcome. Now, injuries happen. We know that you can do everything perfectly right and you might still, unfortunately, get injured. But if you've got a much less risk of that happening if you prep and you kind of do that properly than if you just turn up on the day and cross your fingers and hope that everything's going to be all right when you step on the pitch.
Brilliant. Thanks, Beth. Thanks for your time. Thanks for the brilliant insights that you've given to us. And once again, thank you to Connection Technologies. Thanks, Beth.
No, thank you for having me. Thank you.